You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
Well, this interview is brought to you by Billy Graham's Soul Chat, a place where conversations can begin, where a community can be built. Go to soulchat.ca today. Susan Isaacs has been in movies like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and television shows like, you ready? Here's another long list. Seinfeld, The Drew Carey Show, My Name is Earl, Providence, Crossing Jordan, Diagnosis, Murder, Lois and Clark, Married with Children, Quantum Leap, and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And she also wrote a book. It's called Angry Conversations with God, a snarky but authentic spiritual memoir. SusanIsaacs.net is the website, and Susan joins us today on the show. First question right off the bat, are you ready? We're getting right into it, Susan. Are you ready?
Okay.
Quantum Leap Conference, how was it?
Yes, I just got back. It was so interesting. You know, you can think of like Star Trek, you know, people showing up in their Vulcan costumes.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't like that.
No. Okay.
It's a smaller scale. No, it's just like everyday people from middle America and also people who come from all around the world. You know, you didn't see any supermodels in the room. But they're people who I think really responded to the show because the show dealt with big epic issues like good and evil and trying to, you know, there's a big, you know, issue of redemption. I asked the people in the convention hall, you know, what are some of the shows that they watch now, and they watch things like, you know, Stargate, Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
No one there watched Two and a Half Men.
No.
You know, you don't have a Two and a Half Men convention or a Yes, Dear convention.
Yeah, the Two and a Half Men convention just happened a couple of weeks ago down in L.A. It's that porn convention that they
Yeah. It's called Spring Break.
Yes.
So it was really fascinating. It was actually fascinating because one lady came through from Australia, and because, you know, we had an autograph thing, and she's like, I heard about your book on CNN, but I thought since you were angry at God, and I'm a Christian, I don't know if it's something I wanted to read. Like, you might be, like, pissed off at God forever, and, you know, blah, 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 them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, no, it has a happy ending. Here, buy one right now. So, actually, she bought one off.
Wow, you're smooth. You are smooth.
I know, and I wasn't even the dealer room.
No.
She got one in, you know. So
listen.
Before the feds came by. You can't do that. That's for the dealer room.
Man. But
so that was really cool. There was like actually one person in the room who's like, I saw you on CNN. I'm like, yeah, you and four other people.
Yeah. But you know, you're popular. You're more popular than scones.
I'm more popular than scones. Oh, you saw that clip.
Yes, I did.
That was a really, really funny indie film I did called Change Your Life, which was sort of a mockumentary, a sort of Spinal Tap exposing the multi-level marketing industry. That's right. And I thought the head of the thing was just, he was great. He was more popular than scones.
Scones with jam, even.
Scones with jam, you know, yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of cool clips online. You got to check that. Gateway Swear Words, I think, is probably my favorite, where you and hubby are sitting down with the two kids on the floor, and you're talking about gateway swear words and where it will all lead.
Heck is a gateway swear word.
Yeah. And The Secret, of course, that was another little lovely, lovely little skit you did.
Yeah, that was really funny. I don't know if anybody listening has known about that book, The Secret, you know, Manifest the Law of Attraction. And I say, you know, I guess that book only works in North America because those people in, you know, Darfur, they need to manifest food. If you think about the food, you'll manifest the food or snacks. You know,
what's wrong with you?
Ammo.
Man.
Can you manifest your grenade? I don't know. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous the things that upper middle class white people do with their spare time.
Yeah. I have a very important question that I want to ask you, Susan.
How do I memorize my lines?
Yes.
No, okay.
Now, where were you when John Lennon was shot?
I was at, a biology final. At UC Irvine. And, yeah, I was a huge John Lennon fan, massive John Lennon fan.
But how can you be a big John Lennon fan when he said they were more popular than Jesus? How can you do that?
I forgave him for that. Well, the bigger forgiveness was having to forgive him for marrying Yoko.
That's true. But, that's a bigger issue, actually.
Well, yeah, it's funny because that was like, okay, I want to look on that. It's the same way it's like, you know, there were certain songs on the White Album I just didn't want to play. And, you know, I love the John Lennon without the long hair. He looked like a garden gnome, you know, for
yes.
a while there.
Yes.
But I loved him because, I mean, if you look at his essence, he loved, he was a rebel. He really stood up against, you know, the corruption and he protested against war. And he really loved the underdog. And I really loved him because he was really a goofball. If you see any of him in his old, especially in the old...
footage.
You know, footage of press conferences. He was just, he wasn't afraid to look like an idiot.
Mm.
And I just loved that about him.
Nice.
But yeah, I was in this biology class. My father and I didn't get along at all in high school. We were really at odds. And I was in a biology final. And... when I was driving home, I turned on the radio and they were playing Imagine. And I was like, gosh, John, I wish you knew that there was a heaven. And then I just shut it off. And then when I got home, my father was like, sit down. And he's like, you've heard the news, right? And I was like, no. And he said, sit down. And it was like I knew it before it came out of his mouth.
Hmm.
What had happened?
I have the newspaper from the day he was shot, the Toronto Star. I don't keep many newspapers from things, but I just happen to have that sitting around. The other kind of useless trivia about you, Susan, is that you were born in the same building as John Travolta and Tom Cruise.
Well, I was born in what is now the Blue Scientology building, and not the Shishi Celebrity Center.
No.
Where Tom Cruise, you know, holds press conferences about his personal life,
yes.
which I think is pretty ironic.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was born in what is now is where all the underlings, you know, who have to, like, memorize and go out on the street and try to sell people Dianetics. Yeah, it used to be a hospital. It's really creepy driving by. It really, it's like L. Ron Hubbard Circle, you know, their little drive is called L. Ron Hubbard. You know, he has his own, like, traffic light.
Wow.
Something wrong with that.
Wow, it's always on red, probably.
No, it's always clear.
No, that's right. It's translucent.
Yes, it's translucent. So
a lot of accidents at that intersection.
Only the Satans can see it's green.
That's right. You've been a Christian since you were five, apparently.
Mm.
I see. My son bought into the Jesus stuff when he was five, and we asked on the show here, you know, is that real? Can you really become a Christian at that young of an age? And I guess you're living proof that it's not true.
Well, it can all go downhill from there.
Yeah.
No. Yes, I mean, I said the words, and I remember memorizing the Apostles' Creed and really believing it.
At five, you memorized the Apostles' Creed?
Yeah, well, I was a quick study.
Wow.
You know, and when you hear it, like, you hear it in chapel every, you know, 3 days a week, and you hear it at church on Sundays eventually. I mean, I was probably like, I believe in God, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of things I'm still like. My husband and I go to an Anglican church now, and of course it's the Nicene Creed, so it's all this extra stuff.
Yeah.
You know, about seen and unseen, and I'm like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You had the diet creed.
They had a diet creed. It was the creed for dummies.
Yes.
You know, the digest. Yeah, it was
Reader's Digest.
Reader's Digest.
Yeah. But you went through this whole, as you call it, a middle-class white girl's dark night of the soul stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I always believed in God. I always believed in, you know, Jesus. And I think as I grew older, it became more apparent that Jesus was very real. And right after high school, it wasn't long after John Lennon got shot, that I really turned my will and my life over to God as I understood him, and then went through all sorts of different church experiences trying to pursue God and pursue my dreams and try to figure out what he wanted, and had a little late-term rebellion and then inched back, and I really got burned by some experiences, and then I chose to react to that by, you know, giving God the middle finger and trying to, like, go off and do life the way I wanted to do it, and that never worked.
Yeah, how'd that go for you?
Yeah, how was that working for me? I felt like God, you know, God held me back, and then I managed to just screw my life over a lot worse. You know, it's like, let me show you how I can really mess up and really squander my life, which is what I did for a couple years. And then I let God in a little bit at a time, but I kept him at a safe proximity. You know, I was too afraid. And then, when I hit 40, everything collapsed all at once.
Well, I mean, you are very, very open in your book about stuff, which is why I wanted you on the show today. Okay. Failed relationships, failed career moves, failed attempts at addiction recovery. I mean, you were even...
Well, I did. That's funny, because I didn't fail at recovery. That was the one thing. I stopped drinking, you know, and stopped... But
you had failed attempts.
True that.
Yeah. And you were even rejected by eHarmony, loser.
Three times. I was rejected by three. I was rejected by eHarmony three times. And I was actually on a Fox morning show a couple months ago, right around Valentine's Day, and they wanted to know, like, why I was rejected. And, you know, because I answered the multiple choice questions. It's like, do you like spending evenings alone, or do you like, are you attracted to, you know, black men? I'm like, well, what if I would like to spend an evening alone with a black man? What am I supposed to answer?
Did they ask you anything about pina coladas or getting caught in the rain or anything?
Right, you know. Well, it's funny because they had this expert, you know, on from eHarmony, sort of the, you know, the expert to try to explain why I got rejected. And he's like, are you a complex thinker? Do you see the nuances in life? I'm like, thank you. But what does that say about everyone who got matched? That they're all shallow, you know, and like black and white? I'm like, woo! Because there was like a success story right next to me. They're like, hey, I think complexly. Hold on. Occasionally? So everything fell apart in my life all at once. My career fell apart right when all of my friends got successful. I mean, it was uncanny. The, quote, coincidences, end quote. Like, one of my obscure friends in New York got cast in a hit TV show in L.A. created by my own high school boyfriend.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
And then I went back to New York because I had been in New York for 5 years, went back to L.A. to help my mom, and that's when it all, when the excrement hit the ventilation system.
Nice.
And so I went back to New York, you know, just going through this horrible breakup with a guy I've been dating for 3 years. Went back to these weddings, and a friend called. She's like, you know, my churchy friend. He's like, you know, I'm just going to...
Is this Martha?
Martha.
Is that her real name? Is that her real name?
No, it's not. It's not. Anyone who is, you know, well, just about everybody's name has changed except for mom and dad.
Yeah. Has Martha read your book?
She has, and she laughs. She's like, oh, you know, she knows it. That's what she's like.
She does. She's the epitome of the church lady.
Yeah. Yeah. She's very good sport about it because she's like, yeah, I can't believe I said that. But let me tell you something else I think the Lord would want you to know. No, so she's like, you know what, why don't we just go for a walk in Central Park, get the sun is out, and get your mind off of, like, you know, all these weddings you have to go through and your broken heart, because, you know, my boyfriend was still in New York, my ex. So we're walking along, and we stop on a grassy knoll to sit down and enjoy, you know, the beauty and life still being lived. And who would walk by with his new girlfriend, but my ex-boyfriend.
Oh.
And they literally stopped at this pretzel cart and started making out.
Come on.
I'm serious.
That's just, I don't know. That's so disturbing.
At that point, I'm like, okay, this is not a coincidence, because it's a city of 12 million people, a city I don't even live in anymore, and I got orchestrated there. And that, I felt so crushed. I felt like God had set me up. And why would God do that? He must be cruel. He must be awful. And, of course, Martha said, praise the Lord, he's showing you that your boyfriend moved on.
Oh, did you smack her?
I wish I had a gun. I mean, I told her it's really good that there are, you know, gun control laws in New York City. The thing is, much later I came to realize that God was just tired of me going back and forth with this guy, because we had been dating for 3 years and breaking up and making up and all this stuff. And I was starting to entertain this idea of, like, maybe I could go back to New York and we were going to get together and have coffee for, quote, closure.
Yeah, so the church lady was right then.
She was right in the end, but, you know, there's a timing issue.
Not when you have the gift of prophecy. None of those people have discernment. You realize that?
Well, that's the thing. I remember hearing a prophet guy saying, he's like, it's one thing to have discernment and be able to see and to speak into someone's life, but a lot of those people don't have tact.
No. Yeah, the gift of
you
tact.
Know? I mean, like, Jeremiah had no tact.
No.
You know, I mean, he just, like, you know, ripped the Israelites a new, you know, hole. I mean, he was just no tact at all. She, like, you know, I think there's definitely a thing where you can see into someone's life and recognize it. But the best thing that anyone did for me at that time was just to say, I'm so sorry. That really sucks.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. And that whole, I mean, yeah, wham, wham, wham. My career fell apart and my relationship fell apart. And my mom moved away and my dad died and my mom, all this, these are bad stuff. But it started a deeper falling apart, which was, I don't know if God's good. Why would he be so cruel to me? Why would he pick everyone around me? I'm literally like everyone around me, like random people got TV shows and ended up on Law and Order Spanish Harlem or whatever. You know, it was just insane. And why would he do all of that? Why would he like rub my nose in it with the thing with seeing the guy in Central Park? And I started to feel like, I don't know if I ever heard God. I don't know if he was ever involved, because my entire life I've tried to pray for his will, except for the times when I was running away from him. But so my whole foundation of what I believed and what it meant to my life collapsed. And I ended up having a nervous breakdown, because, you know, if you believed in God your entire life and all of a sudden you're not sure if he's anything like who he said he is, if the Bible is true or if it's just a bunch of people making stuff up. I mean, I never had that kind of level of doubt. And I couldn't function. It was actually very terrifying.
Well, a very profound statement came out of you. I still believe in God. I'm just not sure if he believes in me anymore. And I think that's worse than not believing in God at all.
Sure.
That's heavy.
It's to know he's there, but he just doesn't care.
Yeah.
He just doesn't care about you. Or he's like, you know, there are people in Darfur. Get over yourself. Or maybe he would never, ever be personal. What if he's not personal at all? What if it's all deistic, cold space out there? I mean, I was absolutely terrified. And that's when I started writing. And I certainly wasn't going to, you know, say anything more of these things to people like Martha. And I had just moved back to Los Angeles, so I didn't belong to a church. And I went back to a lot of the churches that I had been to in the past. And I didn't feel God's presence there. I just felt creeped out. You know, like I went to churches and they were doing trance music and they thought they were like, oh yeah, we're revolutionaries. We're going to do trance music. I'm like, far away.
Was this the Juice Bar Church?
Yeah, Organican Raw. You know, I went to this one church where the pastor's like, just a total bloviator. He's like, I love my job, man. He literally said that from the pulpit. I'm like, But the irony is that I was out of a job. I ended up going, I answered an ad for a job as a church secretary, and it was his church.
Oh, no.
And, you know, he really ended up being a really great guy. I was like, I think, you know, the first time I heard you from the pulpit, I thought you were a jerk. And he loved that. He thought it was funny. He's like, well, I am. I am a total jerk. And he was full of flaws, and he was trying to work on them. And he ended up being one of the people that I could actually say, I don't know if God's good. I don't know if I've ever heard him before. I don't know if this is all a crapshoot and you're just making it up. And I think you're a jackass. And you know, in the Lord, you know, that he was able to hear all of it. In the midst of that, he was one person that I could actually talk to. So God knew what he was doing.
Susan Isaacs is on the phone with us. We need to let people know who, you know, because you and I could rattle on forever. We got people have just tuned in. Yes, yes, of course. SusanIsaacs.net is the website you want to go to, and the book is actually called Angry Conversations with God, a snarky but authentic spiritual memoir, and we're about halfway through her story or thereabouts, and the thing I need people to understand right off the bat is you talk very frankly about losing your virginity, struggling with an eating disorder, swearing at God over the circumstances of your life. Here's a quote. I was raised a Lutheran, but as an adult, I tried everything. Pentecostals, Presbyterians, you know those folks. Rock and roll slackers for Jesus, actors for Yahweh, and then I said, screw it. And of course, if you watch the YouTube, you said something different. And became a drunk and a slut. Well, a Lutheran slut. I only slept with two guys. You're so brutally honest. I mean, Donald Miller has this great quote. If King David were a woman and were funny, he'd be Susan Isaacs. And the thing about this book is it surprises you. There are lines in it you won't see coming. You'll be handing this book to somebody else about a month from now, thinking maybe this will help them understand me. You'll do that because it helped you understand yourself first.
You know, I wrote that. I just paid him. No, I'm kidding.
This is dangerous stuff. This
His
is dangerous.
His alternate quote was, "Bitch got job." But we decided that that probably wouldn't work.
May not be. Okay. Now, seriously, let's go to this. You're a Jesus girl, but you sometimes you swear like a sailor. How do you reconcile that? I mean, when I'm by myself, when I drop a hammer on my toe, when I walk into the open cupboard door and smack my head on it, or whatever, I mean, sometimes something comes out every once in a while, and I do a quick scan of the radius around me and make this millionth of a second decision as to whether I should let something fly or not. But publicly, you are a messy follower of Christ.
Yep. I mean, a lot of the stuff on YouTube is stuff I did in front of a secular Hollywood crowd. And so, like, some of the language I might use there would be different than, say, you know,
Crystal Cathedral?
St. Paul.
Yeah.
Huh?
And then in the Crystal Cathedral?
Right.
Yes.
Right. You know, because I don't want the glass to shatter when I'm there. But part of that is definitely in terms of letting the audience identify with me. Like, I'm not church lady. This is me. Sometimes when you use language like that, it actually opens a door for people to listen. People who are hurt, who have left the church years ago, maybe who never grew up with anything, and have only seen Christians as this holier than thou. I'm going to heaven because I don't swear, because I haven't messed up my life. And when I show up and I, you know, use language and I get that honest, they're like, oh, well, maybe I can relate to you then. And that you've let down a barrier.
But Susan, you can hear the church people in the background falling off their ottomans and saying in their head, well, if you take that line of reasoning, why don't you just light up a joint in front of them all? Or why don't you just show a porn clip before your speaking engagement? You know what I mean? Chasing that rabbit. And how do you respond to that?
Well, I say, you know, I usually cuss them out. And, you know, no. Well, you know, it's interesting because I didn't grow up using that kind of language. And that language became much more common to me when I was going through difficult times. Because how else do you express your angst or your frustration? Sometimes those words are really helpful.
Handy, even.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, Martin Luther dropped the S-bomb all the time. And this is something that people don't talk about. You know when St. Paul says, I was a Pharisee, I was this, I was that, but I consider it all
dung.
Lost.
Dung.
Well, dung is not the word he used. He used a Hebrew word that translated is the S-bomb. And because it was very vernacular, it was very vulgar, he used a vulgar, shocking word to shock his reader. In the same way in Galatians, when he said, you foolish Galatians, why are you thinking you have to go back and get circumcised? Why don't you just cut the whole thing off?
Mm-hmm.
But we have prettied it up. And the thing is that we miss that Jeremiah 27, I say it in the book, O Lord, you have deceived me and I was deceived. The actual word could be translated as raped. That the Jewish writers wrote with immediacy and honesty they wrote with very, very graphic words because, I mean, it's part of that culture. But we prettied it up. And I think we do a disservice when we aren't honest with our brokenness. I mean, I think being in the 12 steps really helped me. I was like, oh, these people get to choose whatever God they want. They don't know the real God. And then these people would get up and share such vulnerable stories of things that they did and how they endangered people and their grief and their remorse. And people would get up and be like, hey, you know, you're one of us. Welcome, and you're going to be okay. And I thought, wow, I've never been that honest with anyone. And I've never seen that kind of honesty and vulnerability in a large group setting at church because, I mean, why can't we be like that? And another thing about vulgarity and profanity, my publisher said, you know, can you really, you know, clean it up, please? And she had a good reasoning, and that's like that there's a lot of people who would really benefit from your book. But if you use words that they are offended by, they're not going to get to hear your story. So I was really glad that I cleaned it up for the sake of the people who don't, who maybe need to read the story but might be like, wow, that hurts. Because I remember when I was a kid and my dad would say GD or whatever, it came out with such acrid, it was, I felt like I was getting hit in the face every time he said it. And so I have to honor my audience. It depends on who the audience is. It's funny because in an interview I said over the radio, it was a secular station. They play rock music. They had a gossip call on the website. And I said, you know, the fate got in my head was a jackass. And people were like, but I was like, no, it's the fate god. And I mean jackass like a donkey. You know, I had to, like, backpedal.
Wow.
Because people will hear that and they'll think it's something else.
Yeah.
And they'll think I'm saying that about the real God. So you really have to be very, very careful.
Well,
you have to honor your audience.
I love your messiness. I mean, that's why you're on the show. I love your messiness. I love the fact that you're not together. Here's another quote from you. You're a stalker, Susan screams at God. I broke up with you and you keep stalking me. What if you got me back? What would you do? You'd go back to treating me the same way. You'd control me or neglect me or turn me over to some abusive pastor friend. Well, it's not going to happen. I've moved on. You should too. By the way, you're talking to God here. But I couldn't move on. How could I erase God from my memory? He was in everything I wrote. What other language did I have to describe my longing for beauty and goodness and transcendence? What other person existed who could fulfill that longing? I could not escape him. I mean, did that come out when you took God to counseling, when you took him to couples therapy? Because you really did that.
Yes. I mean, that is the format of the book. Is I did go see a real therapist, a Christian guy who used to be a pastor, and he really said, I need to understand the God in your head because I like my God. I don't think he's a jerk, so I need to hear it. And so we spent time just kind of vocalizing it. Like, I would talk about something, and he'd be like, well, what would God say? And I was shocked when I saw the God in my head because he didn't line up with who I thought God from Scripture was. So that God needed to change and go through counseling. So the format of the book is I'll talk about a portion of my life, and then I will take that into counseling and talk it over with God. And God does have to change because he's kind of a jerk. I mean, he's actually a really big jerk. And that he changes over time. He becomes his real self, and I have to recognize that I've warped him into this version based on tough things that have happened, based on bad teaching, based on my own experience. And I really got a lot out of making God that way because then I could explain him away and I didn't have to be accountable to him if he was a jerk.
Hmm.
And the real God shows up, eventually shows up. He's like, no, you cannot characterize me like that. You know I'm not like that. And you know what? You married me for my money. If you want to know the real me, you want to love me for better or worse, then let's talk. But I'm not doing this anymore. So he gets a backbone, you know. But that is the premise of the book, and I do really call him onto the carpet about a lot of things. And in the end, I realize, like, what a gold digger I've been. You know,
yeah.
I did marry him for his money. I married him for what he was going to do for me, how he was going to make my life better. And there's nothing wrong with wanting our lives to be better. Of course God wants healing in our life. Of course God wants our plans to succeed. But when that becomes the focus, it's not a relationship anymore. I've turned him into my personal assistant.
Hmm. Your friend Mark Joseph wrote about you and a guy I've had a number of conversations with, Bill Lobdell, William Lobdell. He wrote, do you know Bill at all?
No. I know his book came out around the same time mine did, though.
Right, yeah. Called Losing My Religion is what it's called, and he was the former religion reporter for the LA Times, and he basically has walked away from his faith. So Mark Joseph wrote about this, and both of you guys, in Huffington Post, which is I just love Huffington Post. Anyway, why haven't you chucked God like Bill did?
I have to say, I don't know, the poem, The Hound of Heaven, by Francis Thompson, I think it would be very hard to be someone like him or someone like Julia Sweeney. I would feel like there's a certain amount of denial you'd have to go through to just say that God doesn't exist. And because I know I never denied my faith. So maybe that's it's not fair to compare. But I would think you would live your life with feeling tortured. Because what do you do with meaning? What do you do with transcendence? What? How do you explain the beauty and order of the universe? So I didn't chuck. I couldn't. And I don't know why. Maybe because God is the hound of heaven. That, as I say, once you've had a profound experience of God, you can't go back and pretend it didn't happen. You can try to explain it away, but it takes a lot of effort to explain that away. It takes a lot of passion and a lot of vehemence. Like, you look at Richard Dawkins, and he is such, I mean, you want to talk about jackass, he's so angry. Such a turd.
He sounds.
I heard him on the radio, and I'm like, "Who is this guy? Oh my gosh, he's so angry!" And the funny thing is, I turned away, and it came back. He said, "Well, you know, life could have arrived in this universe on the back of a rocket." I'm like, "Okay, there's no God, but organic life could have been shot into the universe on the back of a rocket."
He sounds as angry as John Hagee.
Who's John Hagee?
Oh, never mind. He's an angry preacher.
Okay.
He's angry because he's overweight. I mean,
Jenny Craig.
we gotta get Jenny saved. No, look, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I think, I mean, just pure and simply, one of the reasons I think that you probably haven't totally bailed on God is because he set you up with Richard Branson lookalike, basically. I mean, you married.
That.
You married Larry Wilson, of course, who is, what did you say, the last groovy guy on the planet.
yeah. Well, no, I mean, I had to walk through, all right, I mean, never get married. I mean, never work again in my life as an actor or writer, but God is still good. There's still beauty. There's still love. And I had to say, whoever it was that I wanted to be as an actor or a writer or creative life or wanted to be married, I'm still that person. I need to find a way to create. I need to find a way to do what I love and stop. I need to let go of the expectations I put on God to fulfill things my way. And there was a certain amount of acceptance that came first, and then Larry was kind of the icing on the cake. He was the bonus round. I know that's a horrible thing because it's like, okay, Lord, I really want to love you for you and get that so then you'll give me the goodies. I want to learn the lesson. It's very hard because there's a lot of people who will never get married, who will never, these dreams, and there's a profound sadness that there's a profound sadness that comes and a lot of things. Like I said, what about the people in Darfur, the Christians who are getting persecuted because of their faith? And all they want is just to survive the day and find their kids intact. And some of them don't get that. So what do I do with that? How do I square my own longings with somebody who has endured far worse than me? You know?
Some women...
I mean, I could have a happy ending. It's an epilogue. But then there will be a whole other set of experiences and challenges ahead.
Yeah. Well, and as I was going to say, some women are just absolutely distraught with the fact and are considering giving up on God because he hasn't blessed them with someone as devoted as Hank.
right. You really have watched all the clips on my thing.
I know
that
everything
really
about you.
Devotion.
Everything
if you
about
anything,
you.
Watch anything. Watch Devotion. Watch the short film Devotion on my website. That is a hoot. And with Tony Hale.
It's very, very, very funny. There was something I heard today about there being more and more single women out there, which is great for I was going to say all the guys.
Well,
I'm thinking it's great for cats, right?
There'll be no... Yes, and Sheba, Pat's pit food, has had a spike on Standard & Poor's, I think, you know? Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing. A friend of mine named Mattson Duncan said, "We are in a relationship famine." You know, they may have food famines in Africa, but we are in the midst of a spiritual famine and a relationship famine because our culture is so messed up that relationships become harder and harder. And I think for the single person out there, it's not just you. Our culture, we don't know how to raise kids up to be adults. We have postponed adulthood and responsibility way into the 40s. We haven't been, our fathers are so crippled, they don't know how to tell us, you're a man now, you're a woman now. We don't know who we are. Our parents can spend up so much time in analysis or at the mall or dealing with their own stuff that they don't mentor us. We don't have mentors, and we are all emotionally crippled. The whole culture is emotionally crippled. I mean, when you look at it, who are the most important people in pop culture, like Britney Spears or the Jonas Brothers or Miley Cyrus or Cher? I mean, I don't know. And next month or next year, all of those people are going to be trashed and not around. I mean, what does that say about what we value? Is it any wonder we have a hard time sustaining relationships? I just say to the average person who's like, why isn't God answering my prayer? I think God is really pissed off too. In the Lord.
I really like you.
Thank you.
I really like you.
I've had so many times.
I like you. Will you be my friend?
Yes. Will you be my Facebook friend?
No. I dumped Facebook. It was too easy to flirt. I just forget it. I got out of it. SusanIsaacs.net, two A's. Susan, well, actually, there's more than two A's. There's three in the whole thing, but
ISAA.
Yes, thank you. SusanIsaacs.net, and of course, the book is called Angry Conversations with God, a snarky but authentic spiritual memoir. And you're good. You're one of the good ones out there. You really are.
Thank you. Thank you. It has a happy ending. God doesn't dump me.
Yeah, but even if, I don't know, you and I are not into it having to have a happy ending, so don't sell it like it has to have a happy ending.
I'm sorry, I've done too many interviews on other, yeah, no, I think that that's, a, I hope that the people go away in the book. I just got an email from a guy who has been gone through so much stuff, and he's like, thank God for saying stuff that I was too afraid to say.
Yeah.
And I think people, it's just like, let it rip. God has heard every expletive. Oh, my
exactly.
Gosh. I mean, he's been around. He was around for Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, like, you think you're going to surprise him?
Well said. Well, you know, we started this whole show today by me asking, I've sort of admitted to our listeners that I don't think I love Jesus anymore. And so I opened up the phone lines and people gave me some advice. So I think we're all on the same page here, folks. Mm-hmm. Susan, you... Yeah, anyway, I think I've said it already. I like you. SusanIsaacs.net, and that's the book, and that is Susan. Bless you. I mean, I very, very rarely say that, but I hope that God freaks you out in such a way that you can't help but know that it's Him in relentless pursuit of you.
I know. Would that be so hard just to bless me, please?
Yeah. Thanks, Susan. Good to chat with you.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Susan Isaacs. Boy, that was good. She's a refreshing gal, for sure. Oh, going out with Little Lennon, are we? Nice. Okay. Except Yoko sings on this, too. That's disturbing. All right, one more interview, and then we're running out of racetrack real quick here. Bobby Schindler is the brother of euthanasia victim Terry Schindler Schiavo. Terry Schiavo, you remember her story down in the United States, Florida, the euthanasia story that is still wreaking havoc amongst the politicians and the lawmakers and the medical field. We'll be right back with Bobby Schindler.